Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Spencer McLaughlin back with you in for John Canzano here on The Bald-Faced Truth. Springtime is just full of hope and optimism, and not because I can play golf, you know, 4 or 5 days a week on a good week. I do work sometimes. Anyway, I know a guy who works a lot harder than I do, Carter Baines, 24/7 Sports, BeaverBlitz.com. You can read him over at both of those particular sites. Talk about the bees. But first, Carter, I want your thoughts on this Pat Chun situation. He is at Washington State. Last year, he's on one side of the Apple Cup. A year later, he's going to be on the other side of it. He's now an athletic director in the Big Ten instead of the Pac-12 / Mountain West, whatever that, you know, league ends up being. Your reaction to it?
That's business, right? I mean, that's kind of the state of things. It gave me kind of a similar feeling to when Jonathan Smith left for Michigan State. It's, you know, a guy who's done a lot of really good things at their respective programs who bolts for a Big Ten job when the school he was previously at kind of needs him the most and goes to a bigger and what he thinks is a better opportunity. So it's one of those things where, you know, from a business perspective, I think you can't blame him, just like Jonathan Smith. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you kind of feel like, really, you know, you're going to go to a rival school and you're going to do it at this juncture, like the timing of it, the rivalry aspect. I think that is hard for college sports fans to wrap their heads around, and particularly for Oregon State and Washington State fans to wrap their heads around. But, I mean, it's a great hire for Washington. I mean, he did great things at Washington State, so excited to see how it works out in Seattle for him. But you got to feel for the Cougs.
Yeah, I think you really do, and you're right that he did a good job. You look at, you know, your biggest responsibility, I think, as an athletic director is to make the right coaching hires. And their women's basketball team won the conference tournament a year before this one to make the NCAA tournament. Their men's team gets there for the first time in quite a while. And you look at what, you know, they've done on the football field. They miss a bowl game for the first time in, it's actually been a very long time since the Cougs weren't there. I think he did a good job. I mean, it is certainly a quality hire for Washington. It just doesn't sit right with me. And I think there are a lot of Washington State fans that certainly feel that as well. But still, the Beavs and Cougs will progress on, and they'll play, you know, what I've described as their Mountain West plus schedules. You know, they've got a schedule that, you know, includes more power opponents, I think, typically, or at least high level ones than most Mountain West teams. So I think it's a little stronger than what the league is playing. They're in the Pac-12, but they're really independents this year. We could talk about, you know, their realignment plans and everything of the sort. But I think one thing that Oregon State, Washington State fans, Carter, have been waiting on is, you know, how are they going to watch the home games this year? There are 7 games that will be played at Research Stadium. There will be 6 games played at Martin Field up in Pullman. And the latest reporting from John Canzano indicates that the CW is a potential partner that has not been locked in stone, but that it is moving in that sort of direction. What do you think of that as a potential television partner for the Pac-2?
So it's funny because, you know, around this time last year, as the Pac-12, then a soon-to-be 10-team league is working to get its media rights deal done, and man, it feels like a nightmare that that lasted a whole year. But, you know, the CW popped up in those conversations. I want to see maybe Ion, you know, those cable companies that are in essentially every home, but nobody thinks of as being sports media producers. You know, those started to pop up as options, and everyone kind of laughed at the Pac-12 saying, you know, has the Pac-12 really fallen this far? And then the ACC goes and signs a deal, and it's, oh, this is a great business move by the ACC. They're in all sorts of, you know, they're in all sorts of markets now. You can watch them coast to coast. So I think the inconsistency there is the first thing that I thought of when I saw that, you know, the Pac-12 or Pac-2 is potentially going to land a deal here with the CW. I think from a distribution standpoint, it's a home run for Oregon State and Washington State. I mean, you go from basically not having anyone televising your home games because you don't have a media rights deal to your games being on almost 100% of TVs in the United States. Now, is 100% of the U.S. population going to watch you? Obviously not. But 100% of the population is going to have the choice to, whereas with the Pac-12, like a very small subset on a very few on very few cable providers, and there's no streaming and whatnot. So, look, I think, going back to the distribution element, it's you couldn't really ask for more as far as where it gets you on TVs. The financial element, I'd be curious to see what figures come up if they do finalize that, because obviously financially that's the media rights deals are what drive the sport, and Oregon State, Washington State not having one is pretty harmful to their budgets. So how much they could get from a partnership with the CW, I'm intrigued. Maybe I should look into to what the ACC got. They have some bigger brands that play on their CW games, of course, but no, I like it if that's the direction it goes. I think it's frankly better than nothing, and at the very least it gets them on TV.
Yeah, and they've got games. I too am curious at what the media valuation will be from whatever entity does end up making that particular purchase. Carter Baines of 24/7 Sports and Beaver Blitz joining me here on the Bald Faced Truth. Spencer McLaughlin in for John Canzano. Oregon State has got Oregon coming to town. Washington State's got Texas Tech coming to town. Those games have to have, I think, a solid amount of draw. I think the CW, which has of course got LIV Golf, and you talked about the ACC games that they pick up. I think that would be a good spot to explore, see how it goes for a year, see what kind of television numbers that you can draw there. But certainly it's not going to be at the same level of what they were getting under the former Pac-12 media rights deal, because without a bunch of major markets there, and you've got Oregon State and Washington State, Pullman and Corvallis. Sure, they tap into Portland and Seattle, but even then, you don't have a Bay Area or a Southern California or anything of the sorts. But it certainly would be better than nothing, I think, for the fans. Again, it's about being able to watch the games. But I also think that this is such an important year for Oregon State and Washington State on the football field, because all this realignment happens, and the conversation, we're well aware, you and I both, and many others, of what Oregon State and Washington State are capable of as football programs. But we don't know post realignment how they're viewed by transfer portal players, how they're viewed by recruits entirely, because I think that brand for those schools is still being established. And I think that the first season, you only get one chance to make a first impression. I think that makes this year really important for Oregon State and Washington State to go out and win at least somewhere between 8 to 10 games apiece.
Yeah, you're right. And, again, I go back to how many people have access to the games. If you're going to make a good first impression, you want people to see it. Your road games for Oregon State and Washington State against Mountain West opponents going to be on FS1, I think CBS Sportsnet, the Mountain West partners, those will have good viewers. The Mountain West does, pretty good numbers in their Friday night slot and then their late Saturday slot. So people will be watching your road games. It's just a matter of, drawing them to those home games, which you mentioned the non-conference games. They're playing some big markets. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not sure that the game against Oregon has a TV partner yet, but that's going to draw viewers. That's a home game in Corvallis that you can sell. So, the product is there. It's just a matter of finding the right partner, and the CW is a solid one, but at the very least, you've got half of your schedule on major networks.
Yeah, I mean, you got home games against Idaho State. That's not a big drop, but Oregon on September 14th, that's usually the game that over the last couple of years has had somewhere between 3 and 4 million people watching. Purdue out of the Big Ten coming to town, back-to-back Big Ten opponents there for the Beavs. Colorado State comes in later, UNLV. Later, you got San Jose State, Washington State as well. They end the year at Boise State, so that'll be on either FS1 or CBS. But as Trent Bray has taken over, he's filled out his staff. Ryan Gunderson is the offensive coordinator. They brought in a couple of quarterbacks, and as they move through spring football, what are you looking for from Oregon State and their first year head coach as kind of their biggest priority?
Well, I think obviously number one, you've got to figure out who your starters are, because you just look at the amount of guys that Oregon State lost, both to the draft, to graduation, to eligibility expiring, to the transfer portal. I mean, this is probably the biggest, you know, I haven't run the numbers, but it's got to be the biggest roster overhaul since Jonathan Smith took over in 2018. You know, if not, it's very close to that. So just figuring out who you even have is half the battle. And that's what spring camp is for. You know, they haven't done a ton of live scrimmaging type stuff. It's a lot of going through drills. It's a lot of conditioning stuff. And frankly, a lot of teaching, because it's a new coaching staff too. And half of your roster hasn't been there before. So this is these 15 practices are paramount to setting the foundation for what Oregon State will accomplish in camp in August, and then of course on game days in the fall. You know, figuring out what you've got at the quarterback position. You know what you have in Ben Gulbranson, but two intriguing transfers coming in, Jabari Johnson, Javonte McCoy. I mean, you know, how does that shake out? That's an intriguing thing that I think will undoubtedly roll into the fall. There are very few sure things, I think, on the depth chart. You know, running back set in stone, it's going to be, as per usual, an elite running back room at Oregon State. Offensive line will be okay. Joshua Gray coming back, but, you know, a lot of movement there too. So, again, I just go back to, I think this spring is just about figuring out what you have right now, because there are so many unknowns when you change a roster this much and when you change a coaching staff this much and you do all that at the same time. People just have to learn who they're working with before they can even get anything of substance accomplished.
Yeah, I get the sense that it's probably closer to a true battle between McCoy and Johnson for that quarterback slot. You know, Gulbranson certainly will be in the mix, but I think if you're, you know, Ryan Gunderson, the OC, Trent Bray, the head coach for Oregon State, you're looking at those two guys and saying, all right, we've brought them here for a reason, because we feel like there's another gear we can get from the quarterback position. I wouldn't think Gulbranson could win the starting job, right?
I mean, it's certainly possible. You know, again, we don't really know what McCoy looks like at the FBS level. Coming in from FCS at Idaho, I mean, he was great at that level. But, you know, even Cameron Ward at Washington State had a little bit of an adjustment period there his first year. And then Johnson coming over from Mizzou I don't think he's played any meaningful snaps as a college football player. So not knowing what those guys look like in a you know, quasi power conference roster, you know, Gulbranson gives you, I think, a sense of security in that he's won games for you. He's looked decent at times and, you know, has popped a couple of times. Now he obviously has his ceiling and he has his, you know, he has his pitfalls like we saw in the bowl game against Notre Dame. But at least the coaching staff is more familiar with him and knows what they can get out of him. So, I mean, man, it's probably, in my mind, a three-man race until the fall. And, again, you go from there. But I am excited to see what a Javonte McCoy offense could look like. Because, and I don't know if you watched any of his Idaho games, and I don't know if any of the listeners watched any of his Idaho games. But, I mean, this is a guy who is on, and I'm not saying he's Cam Ward, but he's on a Cam Ward trajectory where he wins National Freshman of the Year at an FCS school. He looks really good the next year. Then he moves up to FBS. And this is a path that has worked really well for quarterbacks in the past. And he's kind of that same mold of, you know, a guy who can do it with his arm and his legs and who won a ton of games with the Vandals up there in Moscow.
Finally, with Carter Baines, Beaver Blitz, and 24/7 Sports, the Lady Hoopers for Oregon State have been balling out in a big way this year in a Pac-12 that has been beyond stacked. UCLA, USC, Colorado, Stanford, Utah. I mean, it's, you know, the best conference, I think, in women's basketball in the country. The Beavs are into the Sweet 16. Scott Ruick's done a fantastic job. How much further do you think they can go?
Well, they're on the same side of the bracket as South Carolina, so that certainly limits your upside. I mean, South Carolina hasn't lost a game this year. I'm probably going to win the national championship unless Iowa has something to say. So, that limits your upside. But, drawing Notre Dame, that's a 3 seed versus a 2 seed. It's kind of one of those coin flippy matchups. I want to say Oregon State played Notre Dame in a previous women's tournament, if I'm not mistaken, and lost that game. That would have been a handful of years back now. But I mean, they're playing great ball at the right time. Reagan Beers being healthy is obviously a huge boon to that team. And it was pretty cool for them to put on a big show in front of a record-breaking crowd at Gill this past weekend, and to sweep that regional, go 2-0, make it to the Sweet 16. Program's right back on the same track that it was before, that quick lull there, when they had the exodus of transfers and, took a step back last year, and I believe even the year before. But this is a Scott Ruick team, man. This is what you become accustomed to. It's Sweet 16s. It's making it to the Final Four. Like, that's what Scott Ruick does. And I just think it's cool to see that he was able to get things back on the right track after, just such a short blip on the radar there. I think, at the end of his tenure, we'll look back and say, that was a blip on the radar. We don't, that did not tell the story of Scott Ruick's program.
Carter Baines, good to talk to you, my man. Appreciate it. All things Oregon State.
Thanks, Spencer.
We'll step aside, come back, a little bit of what we call the big splash. That's next right here on the Bald Face.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald
Face. Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.